Our next speaker is Ms. Sullivan, and her title of the presentation is Willow Rhizosphere Microbial Activities Enhanced Heavy Metal Bioavailability.
Good morning. I'd like to start by thanking everybody for coming this morning and allowing me to share a very small part of my dissertation research today on specific microbial activities that may be enhancing heavy metal bioavailability in the rhizosphere. Like I said, it is just a very small part of my dissertation research, and so in order for these experiments to make sense in the larger context, I'm going to start by explaining the unique research location where I've been doing this work, and also give some of my initial findings that led me to investigate these mechanisms. So let me just get started with that. Can everybody see that okay? I worry, can we cut these lights at all? Does anybody have any problems seeing that, first of all? No problems. Okay, well, if you can see it fine, then we'll just leave it. But the site is actually located near Elba, New York. So this is the western end of New York. I think it's probably fine. That's too dark, huh? Okay. You don't need to see me. So, sorry, the site is located near Elba, New York, which is indicated here with the red star. It's actually the western end of New York, just south of Canada. Here you can actually see Lake Ontario, and there's this large gray mass that comes down through Canada and over into western New York, and that actually represents a geological formation of Lockport dolomite, which is dolomitic limestone that underlies the entire region where I've been studying these peat soils. These particular peat soils are actually somewhat unique in that they're circumneutral. The pH range is between 5 and 7. And also, they're unique in the fact that the dolomitic limestone that underlies the peat actually contains localized concentrations that can be fairly high of zinc, cadmium, lead, and in most cases, sulfur. In the 1950s, the USGS actually came through the area to prospect and see if they could make money off of actually mining zinc from the peat. Fortunately, or unfortunately, depends on how you see that, they decided it wouldn't be cost effective, but they did write a rather large report on the area that actually discovered in some locations in the peat, the zinc would actually reach 88,000 ppm, which is extremely high. Just to give you a reference, if you're not familiar with zinc in the U.S. soils, it usually ranges no higher than 84 to 100 ppm in soils. And this was highly heterogeneous across the site. Around the same time that the USGS came through and prospected the area, they decided to actually convert this entire peatland area over to agriculture. So permanent drainage tiles were installed at the same time as permanent willow hedgerows were installed roughly 60 years ago to delineate the different fields, because once the drainage tiles were installed, the peat became extremely friable and dry and was virtually blowing away. And these mostly hedgerows mostly consist of Salix purpurea. So when I joined the project, initially there was this issue of heavy metal heterogeneity across the site, and a few different farmers had approached the research scientists at Cornell about trying to understand this issue here. This is actually early onion field, where out in the middle of the field there's just this area where nothing would grow at all, and these farmers had quite a few of these throughout the region that they were really concerned with. Sometimes they would be a meter in diameter, sometimes they were tens of meters in diameter. And understanding the microbial component there and the biogeochemistry involved on the oxidative reactions was where I came into the picture. And so my first step in understanding the site was actually to get a picture of the spatial heterogeneity and understanding the soil chemistry and the microbiology. And also I was sort of interested in these willow hedgerows, because we were seeing these zones of toxicity out in the field with the crops, and the willow hedgerows appeared unaffected. So I created a sampling design that would hopefully give me a picture of the heterogeneity at the site by creating this huge grid and GPS locating all my sampling locations and entering those into spatial analysis software. So the initial findings were that, first and foremost, along the willow hedgerow, these points here represent the data points that I collected, the spatial interpolations and mapping of the soil chemistry at the site. First and foremost, we found that pH was highly buffered along the willow hedgerow. It mostly hovered around 6, didn't drop too much below that at all. The pH did drop out in the middle of the field, where we also saw zinc concentrations becoming phytotoxic. That was one of our first big discoveries, was that most of these dead zones out in these fields were actually from zinc. It wasn't from cadmium, which is what we initially had suspected. So high degree of spatial variability across the site. This site is not even near the size of a football field, and we were seeing huge variations, and found that the crop phytotoxicity was due to zinc. Also, when I looked into the microbial community using molecular techniques, I found more or less what I sort of expected to see. Those communities where the pH was somewhat higher and the zinc was somewhat lower grouped towards one end of the graph. Those communities where the pH was a little bit lower and consequently zinc was higher grouped towards the other end of the graph. What I didn't expect to see exactly was that the willow soil microbial communities tend to sort of buck that trend and group together. I also found that the number of TRFs, which in this case we can roughly equivocate to the number of species, was essentially the same across the entire site. And what made this distinct was that they were different types of species. It wasn't a different number of species, it was simply different types of species, which again brought my interest into this rhizosphere microbial community. As well as this was sort of the impetus for this next work, was I also looked at the willow tissue zinc content and found that as we move, so these would be the sites at the northern end of the field, sites towards the southern end of the field, keeping in mind that the pH is buffered. Here the pH scale is given on the left-hand side of the graph, and the willow tissue zinc content is given by the green bars, and that axis is here on the right. So pH still hovers around 6, but what we see is that the zinc content of the willow tissues ranges between 1,000 and 1,200 ppm. And just for reference, most crop phytotoxicity for zinc occurs in the tissues of the crop plant around like no higher than 300 ppm, and those crop plants are dead. So the willows ranging up to 1,200 ppm is pretty significant. So all these things in mind, at the same time I'm doing all this research, there was also a group at Penn State working with Anid Martinez looking at the speciation of the zinc and the other heavy metals at the site, found that most of the heavy metals were bound in reduced sulfur compounds. So that in mind with these other data I've just shared led me to form two new hypotheses about specific rhizosphere microbial activities that could be contributing to this heavy metal uptake. The first, of course, has to do with sulfur oxidation. I hypothesized that the more sulfur oxidizing bacteria there were in the rhizosphere, the greater the heavy metal content of the willow tissues would be. And then also, this idea of siderophore production by bacteria. Traditionally, siderophores are thought of as iron chelating compounds, but more and more the literature lately is pointing to the fact that siderophores can actually strongly bind most divalent cations, including zinc, cadmium, copper. So this was an issue I wanted to investigate. So as for the first hypothesis, I wanted to look at the sulfur oxidation, oxidizing microorganisms in the rhizosphere. In order to address that, I utilized sulfur oxidation gradient tubes set up as an MPN, or most probable number. What the tubes essentially do is they set up this gradient where you have a sulfide plug at the bottom of the tube, and of course oxygen in the headspace of the tube. Oxygen can then diffuse through the overlay, which is actually gelatinous. It's not fully solid. So your sulfide can diffuse up, your oxygen can diffuse down, and the pink rhizosphere in here indicates where the oxygen is diffusing down. The sulfur will then, even by chemical means, actually precipitate out where the oxygen meets the sulfide, and you'll have a little band here of elemental sulfur. What happens when you have sulfide oxidizing microorganisms in that tube is the rhizosphere gets, basically the pink zone gets smaller because the microbes are eating up the oxygen. And you'll actually see that elemental sulfur layer shift upwards and follow behind the sulfide oxidizing microbes. And these are just some images to demonstrate the fact that those were in fact cells and it wasn't just a chemical reaction here. So what I found through the use of those tubes was pretty interesting actually. What we have here is we're actually looking at total culturable microorganisms in the red bars or maroon bars here. And that axis is here on the left side, total culturable organisms, log 10. And what we see is from the north end of the field to the south end of the field, those are actually roughly the same. Statistically, they're the same. So just like I said with the molecular technique, what I was seeing was roughly the same number of species all across the field. Similarly here, I find despite changing willow tissue zinc content, we see the same numbers of total culturable bacteria. The difference here is that when you look at these gray dots, which represent the number of sulfur oxidizing bacteria in the rhizosphere, we have more than an order of magnitude increase from the north end of the field to the south end of the field. That axis is given here on the right-hand side, sulfide oxidizing bacteria in the rhizosphere log 10. So, very interesting result for the first hypothesis. The second hypothesis I addressed through the use of chrome azurol S. If anybody's familiar with CAS, it's a blue dye that actually binds to the iron in the media. As long as it's bound to that iron, it appears blue. When the iron is sequestered from the dye through the use of a siderophore, there's a color change that can be observed. The color change is dependent on the type of siderophore, the class of siderophore that's being produced. And this is actually a series of almost 80 different isolates that I tested last year. And it shows that the hydroxamates usually will come out yellow or orange. Carboxylates will usually just give a zone of clearing, so it still appears blue. And the catechols will typically come out red or dark orange or even violet sometimes. And this is just an example of some plates where I did a typical soil series dilution, established colonies on a plate, and then used the CAS overlay and could distinguish that out of three colonies existing on this plate, we have two producing siderophores. So through the use of that method, the results are interesting again. here what I'm representing, of course, the northern end of the field down to the southern end of the field. To actually utilize this method, you actually have to be able to culture the organisms on deferrated media, meaning media that has had all the iron basically scrubbed from it in order to induce that siderophore production if the organism is capable of it. So to even be able to culture organisms on this type of media is a feat in and of itself for the organism. So what I'm showing here is the full length of the bar are so far the colonies that have been able to form on the deferrated media, and then the purple or maroon part of the bar here are those colonies that formed on that media that were also capable of producing siderophores. So what we see is the proportion is actually higher up at the north end of the field than it is at the southern end of the field, but the number of colonies that could form on deferrated media were higher at the southern end of the field. So what can I conclude from these mechanistic experiments that I've been doing recently? First of all, sulfur oxidation is a clear result in my mind. It's clear that microbial sulfur oxidation is greater under the willows that have greater metal content. So I propose that that's a mechanism releasing zinc from the reduced sulfur compounds and increasing bioavailability and uptake. However, the siderophore experiments are a little more muddy. I still need to elucidate exactly what's going on there, and I intend to continue on with the replication to get a feel for there's a potential that the CAS overlay is not sensing or it's not sensitive enough to sense all the siderophores that are being produced by those organisms that are capable of growing on the deferrated media. So further research is necessary. So what I intend to do over the next few months is basically isolate and identify the organisms that are capable of these mechanisms that are increasing bioavailability and actually check that their growth is being ecologically relevant and increasing bioavailability. And to do that, I intend to grow each isolate, use the products of microbial growth to perform soil extracts and see if that actually increases the bioavailable metals in those soil extracts. So that said, I'd like to thank all my committee members, all the Thiessen-Buckley lab members that have helped me through the years. I fine-tuned the CAS method during my Fulbright, and of course the EPA STAR has been funding the search for microbes that might be useful in bio and phytoremediation efforts. So with that, I'll take questions. If somebody could hit the lights, that would be great. Thank you.
The chrome
azurol. You can just say CAS.
Thanks. Is it capable for fungi, or is it?
Absolutely.
And what's the lower detection limit?
That it depends on the way you utilize the technique. There have been a few different papers coming out recently where you can actually use a microtiter plate and the detection method is a lot more sensitive, and that's probably what I'm going to go to after this. Just utilizing the plate like that, especially with more than one colony on a plate, those colonies can often interact and your detection method limit may not be as low as I would like it to be. I can't give you a number, sorry.
We got a
have time for more one for one more question.
Have not specifically looked at root exudates, no. What had been suggested and discussed before was the acidification in the rhizosphere, potentially whether it was root exudates or the microbial community. But in retesting the pH over and over and over, we're not seeing any acidification on a larger scale. So we haven't really explored that aspect.
One more question. Yes.
Have you tried sterilizing the soil from the site, seeing if the willow will still take up as much soil?
I have not yet. That's been sort of a question, is if I want to address bioassays with root cuttings and or willow cuttings, I'm sorry, whether it's inoculated or non-inoculated, sterile soils, non-sterile soils, that's an issue I have to debate with my committee as to whether or not that'll be another step forward.
Okay.